How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? Good evening. This is Guy Savage speaking to you from Chicago. Every Monday evening at this same time, the Mutual Network brings you a summary of European news compiled by correspondents of the Chicago Tribune and associated newspapers and sent by wireless and cable from the European capitals by the Tribune's distinguished foreign staff. The Mutual Network thus brings to a nationwide audience a program of European news independently gathered and informatively reported by American correspondents at the scene and free to report that scene as they see it. We present Foreign News. Despite the greatest air and naval activity of the war on the North Sea, and despite Germany's sadness over the loss of the pocket battleship Admiral Graf Spee, 1 million Christmas trees which have arrived in Berlin are having a lively sale, Sigrid Schultz, the chief of the Chicago Tribune's Berlin Bureau, reports. The fears of Germans that this would be a treeless Christmas are relieved, Miss Schultz continues, but whether everybody will have enough candles to light up their trees is another question. In Germany, electric lighting of trees is not considered ideal because it lacks the romantic charm that one associates with the Weihnachtsmann. Women who shop for candles today had to produce their soap ration cards in a number of stores, and the number of candles they bought was inscribed on the cards. The war has affected deeply the traditional Christmas preparations. A person cannot simply study advertisements when preparing for the purchase of presents. The person first must remember various rules and regulations about the distribution of goods of all kinds. One must study and remember what can be bought without special official permits. In the old days, Berlin enjoyed the glitter of lights and the noise of the Christmas fair on the square alongside the old imperial castle. Now all German cities are blacked out and lights are banned. Candy is even rationed. The necktie booths, which once did a thriving business, the hot dog and wafer stands, insist on the presentation of food or clothing cards. To make up for the loss of the traditional fair, Berlin authorities have authorized, or rather organized, a number of small Christmas fairs, which, however, close daily before sundown. Toys, Christmas tree decorations, and lace doilies are much in evidence at the fairs. Novelties this year are phosphorescent flowers, animals, initials, and tags of all descriptions. They can be attached to buttonholes to protect the wearer from collisions as they wander through the darkened streets. The Germans and British yesterday gave widely divergent reports of activities on the North Sea. The Germans said their fighting planes shot down 34 of 44 attacking British bombing planes in an aerial battle off the German naval base of Heligoland near the mouth of the River Elbe. The Germans said they lost only 2 planes. The British asserted that 12 German Messerschmitt fighting planes were shot down and admitted that 7 British bombers were unaccounted for. Both sides agreed on one thing. It was the largest aerial engagement of the war. Reporting on other air and naval action, the Germans asserted that their scouting planes had sunk 4 British steamers and damaged 3 British warships in a bomb and machine gun raid on a convoy yesterday. Germany was bitter over the scuttling of the pocket battleship Admiral Graf Spee at Montevideo yesterday, and informed sources said it would mark the beginning of new attacks by our fleet against England. That is a direct quotation. It was reported that the Admiral Scheer, sister ship of the Spee, was in the South Atlantic ready to prey on British and French shipping. German official sources declared that Uruguay, under British pressure, broke international law by failing to give the Spee sufficient time to make herself seaworthy. In London, the British expressed great satisfaction over a week's work of their navy, including the engagement in which 3 British warships disabled the Graf Spee. Winston Churchill, the first Lord of the British Admiralty, declared that the destruction of the raider Admiral Graf Spee was a cause of thankfulness in our islands. He asserted that the peaceful shipping of all nations may now enjoy the freedom of the sea. Churchill said the Spee had the choice to stay in Montevideo Harbor and be interned, or to come out and fight. Then, he said, she discovered a third alternative, to come out and sink herself. Turning to European waters, Churchill said, here at home in the North Sea, our British submarines had the best week I can remember in this or the last war. Only when a German warship is sighted are British submarines able to use their power and skill. The German warships hardly even venture out of port, and then only for furtive dashes. He charged that the Germans now are concentrating on attempting to sink fishing boats. He then praised the work of the British submarine Salmon, which he said last week had blown up a German U-boat, hit a 6,000-ton German cruiser with 1 torpedo, and another cruiser of equal size with 2. He referred to the British submarine Ursula, which today reported the sinking of a 6,000-ton cruiser. Thus, Churchill says, a considerable proportion of the total German cruiser strength has been sunk or put out of action in a single week. Referring to the aerial and submarine warfare in the North Sea, Churchill asserted that, in their wrath, the Germans have been trying to bomb individual unarmed ships moving up and down the east coast of England. Out of 24 ships attacked, only 6 small boats engaged in fishing and 1 small coastal vessel were sunk, and the bulk of the others were not even hit by the many bombs cast upon them, he said. These outrages are the tactics of a guilty regime which feels the long arm of sea power laid upon its shoulders. Churchill then told of the landing of the Vanguard of the Canadian Expeditionary Force yesterday. He said the leading division of the Canadian Army, strongly escorted across the ocean and guarded by our main battle fleet, disembarked safely and smoothly for a period of intensive training in England before joining their British and French comrades on the Western Front. The troops included a battalion from the eastern provinces and a hospital corps that had traveled 6,000 miles from British Columbia. Among them were 100 or so volunteers from the United States. They were greeted on arrival at Scottish ports by Dominion's Secretary Anthony Eden. A German embassy spokesman in Buenos Aires announced that 1,039 members of the Graf Spee's crew had arrived there from Montevideo and would be interned. The men arrived by tugboats and a barge. Though the sailors will be held, it was indicated the officers will be released on their promise not to participate in the European war. At Montevideo, where the Spee was scuttled and sank in a shallow water yesterday, new explosions rocked the hull, apparently caused by a gas that formed in confined spaces from burning fuel oil. Uruguayan gunboats patrolled the vicinity of the wreck. Harold Tatum, the Chicago Tribune's Buenos Aires correspondent, in a dispatch from Montevideo, tells of that city's reaction to the scuttling of the Admiral Graf Spee. A few bits of twisted wreckage and bits of floating debris were all that remained of the Spee, and Montevideo was getting back to normal, Mr. Tatum reported. The British cruiser Achilles, one of the warships which took part in the battle, which disabled the Spee, viewed and photographed the wreckage which extended above the water. The attendance, by the way, at football games yesterday, a favorite South American sport, was the smallest of the season because even Montevideo's most enthusiastic fans preferred to watch the Spee's departure and the subsequent explosion and fire. All conversation dwelt on the end of the pocket battleship and the belief that the battle last Wednesday was a famous engagement that will go down in history. A dispatch from Hugh Curran, the Chicago Tribune's correspondent in Dublin, reports that Ireland soon will have a small fleet of torpedo boats and trawlers for coastal patrols. Neither in numbers nor power will the new vessels be worthy of the title of navy, but they will be of immense value as a mobile adjunct of the coastal watch, Mr. Curran continues. The fleet will include several small, fast torpedo boats carrying 2 or 3 torpedoes each, and some boats of the trawler type carrying adequate armament. This development is said to be not the result of the war, but has been contemplated by the Dublin government ever since 4 principal Irish ports were turned over to the British forces. The vessels were said to be needed because of the government's neutrality policy and the possibility of incidents taking place in territorial waters. Hitherto, the Irish Marine Force consisted of 2 fishery patrol boats, which have been armed for defense purposes. 20 Soviet-Russian planes today made the first important air raid on Finland since the 2-day bombing of Helsingfors and other cities at the start of the Soviet-Finnish War. The raiders bombed 2 suburbs of Viborg, and air raid alarms were sounded all along the Gulf of Finland. 1 plane was shot down outside Viborg, but the extent of the damage done by the raiders was not disclosed. On the fighting fronts, the Finnish High Command reported that a total of 36 Russian tanks were destroyed and that a number of attacks were repulsed. The communique said that 26 of the tanks were destroyed on a 12-mile front on the Karelian Isthmus. Norwegian reports said that in northern Finland, a small detachment of Finns using machine guns had killed 700 Russians who were moving en masse along an exposed highway. It was reported that at another place, 300 Russians who were lured onto ground mined by the Finns were destroyed. The Moscow communique declared that Soviet troops had occupied the town of Pitkäjärvi, about 53 miles south of Petsamo in northern Finland. The action on the Western Front today was confined mainly to scouting activities. The French High Command's morning communique said, a quiet night, some artillery fire. The evening communique said, Toward midday, a sharp engagement took place in the Vosges Mountains between one of our reconnoitering parties and German units. We took some prisoners, including two officers. The German High Command's communique said that there was livelier artillery action of both French and Germans between the Moselle River and the forest yesterday, and it added that the German Air Force carried out reconnaissance flights over eastern France. A cable from John McCutcheon Raleigh, a member of the Chicago Tribune Berlin Bureau staff, relates that the monotonous daily repetition in official German war communiques of the phrase reconnoitering activity was clarified somewhat today by a German officer who told that the phrase meant and just what it did mean and how it was applied to the warfare on the Western Front. It is necessary to maintain continuous scouting parties to keep informed of enemy troop movements, the officer said, and to discover whether new units have entered the line, which might indicate reinforcements and an eventual strong attack. There are many reasons for forays in strength, he added. Among them are actions to detonate enemy minefields, capture prisoners, get information for headquarters, and to establish advanced observation posts where the results of artillery fire have been seen more clearly. The officer explained that the equipment the soldiers carry in such raiding parties may vary according to the circumstances. On ordinary raids, the officer said, the men carry wire cutters, heavy leather gloves, potato masher-type hand grenades, light machine guns, extra boxes of ammunition, tools for digging in, and spare rations in case they might be cut off temporarily from their lines. When patrols set out to explode enemy minefields in villages or on rough terrain, they carry batteries and coils of wire. After hooking up an explosive charge, the long strands of wire enable the men to get out of range of the blast. This is done in the hope that such explosions will set off hidden enemy mines. There have been many of these mining parties operating in the no-man's land between the French and German lines. As to the kind of camouflage used, the officer said that usually the men remove all insignia from their uniforms to prevent identification of their units if they're captured. They daub mud on their helmets to prevent the reflection of the sun from exposing their positions. Many of the troops, especially trained for scouting purposes, affix branches and leaves to their uniforms and headgear to blend with the landscape, the officer concluded. A Swiss canary gave his life for his country today, a dispatch from E.R. Noder, the Chicago Tribune's correspondent in Bern, Switzerland, reports. The supreme sacrifice was made by the yellow warbler when a skeptical resident of Bern decided that it would be a good idea to test his new gas mask over the kitchen stove. Carefully sealing the kitchen doors and windows, he adjusted the mask over his face, sat in a chair beside the stove, and opened the gas jets. He waited to see just what would happen. He then heard a thud, and peering through the foggy window of his mask, he saw that his wife's favorite canary had fallen from its perch and was lying on the bottom of the cage, its head turned under its wing. Hastily turning off the gas, he threw open the windows and tried to revive the bird, but to no avail. As a result of the incident, Swiss authorities warned the people not to try any kitchen experiments with the masks, which they said are not designed to offer protection from household gas. A dispatch from Kempe Shiba, the Chicago Tribune's correspondent in Tokyo, reports that Foreign Minister Admiral Nomura today informed American Ambassador Joseph Clark Grew that Japan is preparing to reopen the Pearl and Yangtze Rivers to the commerce of foreign powers. The Pearl River in South China is to be opened as far as Canton, and the Yangtze in Central China as far as Nanking. These rivers have been closed for months, the Japanese asserting that other traffic would interfere with their military operations. Nomura also told Grew that Japan would not shut out American economic activities in China. The interview was expected to mark a turning point in Japanese-American relations. All points of the Chinese question were discussed. Sweeping concessions were made by Japan to most of the American demands. You have just heard foreign news and news comment compiled by correspondents of the Chicago Tribune and associated newspapers on duty at the news centers of the European capitals. A regular Monday evening feature presented through the facilities of WGN Chicago. Guy Savage announcing for you. This is the Coast to Coast Network of the Mutual Broadcasting System.